The Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors: EliteForm.com, IgnitionAPG.com, PlayUSA at PLAEUSA.com, and Sorinex Exercise Equipment at Sorinex.com. And now, the Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast. Welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk with your host, Ron McKeefer.
Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Everything you got!
On this podcast, hear Coach McKeefer's straight talk about training, featuring the top strength and conditioning professionals from around the world. And now, here's your host, Ron McKeefer.
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefery, and this is episode number 133. Truly appreciate you being here each and every week. Thanks so much for watching, and you know, I got a great episode for you today. Judd Logan is a four-time Olympian. He's the head track coach, throws coach at Ashland University, and got a chance to hear him speak at the Sorinex Summer Strong this past year, and was just blown away just by how great of a speaker he was, his accomplishments, and then the content was great. And I gotta quickly thank everybody again. I haven't had a chance to do it on the show, but thank everyone that listens to the show, that supported me, that's lifted me up throughout my career. As most of you know, I was named the 2016 NSCA Strength Coach of the Year, and couldn't be more honored to represent our organization, my family, the athletes I've coached, the current and past athletes, the coaches that I get to work with, and the people that have contributed to my career. And so blown away by the support, the overall, just the outpour of support. And thanks so much for that. But it ties in really well with this episode, because Judd goes into the six steps to kind of find success. You know, it's finding the light giver and being an explorer and finding the gold standard and developing something that others seek you out for, and finding the oracle and, mentoring someone else. And so, we dive into that in this episode. We talk about those six steps. We talk about his journey, blown away by that. He's a MAC athlete. So, being at Eastern here, really found that interesting and cool, and we talked a little bit about track programming and things along those lines, but just a great, great episode. I know you're going to enjoy it. Before you do, though, I want to make sure we recognize our sponsor for this episode, Sorinex. As I mentioned, I met Judd at the Sorinex Summer Strong, and if you have not gone to that that conference each year, it is phenomenal. Phenomenal experience, and it is. It's an experience. It's not a conference. It's there's an athletic component to it. There's great speakers, and then just some of the best networking and talking shop and chalk talks and things going on. But can't thank Sorinex enough for putting that on each year. It's such a great way to give back to our community. But it's really cool. And what's the best part about it is that it started from simply a birthday party for Mr. Soren, and just unbelievable deal where it's grown to. But for those that don't know, this is Deadcember, deadlifts all December long. And if you have not picked up your shirt from Sorinex for your Deadcember shirt, make sure you do so. And then, go and, film yourself, doing a couple of sets, reps of deadlift, post it on their Facebook page. And if you're not following them on Facebook or Twitter, make sure you're following Sorinex. They put out some great stuff. They just got done doing Houston's one of Houston's basketball rooms, and just a top-notch product, but more importantly, a top-notch company. So make sure to follow them. And if my wife is listening, which she occasionally does, the center mass bells are out, and I want some for our garage. She even watched the highlight video or the sales video that they had on Facebook, and sent me a text and said, "Is it weird that she thinks that they're cool?" So hopefully it is already in the works, and I have some center mass bells being shipped to me for Christmas by her. But if you haven't gotten a pair or know what they are, check them out. And just a really cool, innovative piece, and probably the single most unique thing about Sorenex is their ability to be innovative and come up with new things. So make sure you check them out. Can't say enough great things about them. Sit back, enjoy this episode. I know you're going to like Judd Logan, and we'll see you on the other side.
All right, guys, super excited to have Coach Judd Logan with us. I got a chance to listen to Coach speak down at the Sorenex Summer Strong, and it was just one of those presentations where you're sitting back and everything he said, I'm sitting there nodding my head along with and in agreement, and he's preaching to the choir in a lot of ways, and just some great stuff. So we're going to get into that. But, Coach, appreciate you taking time out of your day and spending time with us.
I appreciate it. You and I have been trying to get this thing hooked up, and we finally found some time that works for both of us.
That's awesome. Well, Coach, you have a phenomenal story, phenomenal journey, both as an athlete and as a coach, accomplished in both. But kind of go into, you know, Reader's Digest version, why you got into, competing as a high-level athlete and getting into coaching, and just how that taking you to your current position.
Well, like I talk about a lot of times when I do public speaking, is that I knew at the age of 8 exactly what I was going to do with my life, and that was play for the Green Bay Packers. And my dad played for the Packers. I watched the way he went in and commanded a room. I wanted that as an 8-year-old. As I grew up watching him, I knew that was something that respect level that he had, and I thought that the only way that you could achieve that was playing for the Green Bay Packers. Then my brother goes and gets a full ride to Ohio State University. Coaches like Woody Hayes are in our house. And so I thought that plan was right on schedule until I found out I was not as good a football player as I thought I was. I went to college at Kent State University to do track and football. And football in college, as you know, that's a different animal. I don't care what level you play at, the level of commitment and love for the game. And I didn't have that love for the game. I had a love for track and field. And I discovered the hammer when I was at Kent State. I got a MAC championship when I was there. I qualified for an NCAA. I was graduating with a degree in radio and TV. I was going to go to work for ESPN.
Yeah.
They weren't even in Ohio yet. And I was going to go to work for them. And next thing you know, I'm packing up my dorm room, getting ready to come home, and Al Schotterman, who'd been a 72 Olympian, this is 1982, asked if I could stop by and see him. So I stopped by his house, and Coach Schotterman basically said, you know, the Olympics are in 2 years. I said, yeah, they're going to be in Los Angeles. How cool is that?
Right.
And he basically said, how would you like to go? And I asked, honestly said, you have tickets already? I didn't know what he was talking about. I mean, I was okay. I had thrown 210 feet. I was ranked number 41 in the United States, number 1 in Ohio. And I said, Al, don't they only take 3? He says, you give me the next 2 years of your life, put the shot put and the discus away. I've only coached you for a year now. In 2 more years, I can put you on that U.S. Olympic team. So I bought it, man, hook, line, and sinker. Never had been an Olympic dream. Never had even let that thought be entertained in my mind. So he really exposed a large period of my life to me by illuminating that path.
Right.
And that next year, I moved all the way up to number 17 in the United States from 41. And by the time the Olympic trials rolled around, I opened up my first meet at 237 feet when the American record was 244,
wow,
which I later broke and then re-lost to Bill Green in 1984. And I went out to the trials, and my family's like, we're going to come out and support you. And I'm like, no, you guys stay here because it'd be too expensive to do the trials and the games.
Right.
So that's when my dad said he knew that I had the confidence that I could go out there and get in that top that top 3. And I went out to L.A., like 9,000 people in 100,000 feet people stadium. And you could have heard a pin drop. But it was the biggest meet of my life, and I ended up getting second. And walking into those opening ceremonies in 1984, I knew after I looked up and saw 100,000 people in that stadium and millions more watching on television that this was something that I was going to continue to do as long as I could do it.
Absolutely. You got into coaching and now at Ashland there, where you've had tons of success as well as a head track coach and throws coach. And talk a little bit about, you know, that transition from athletics to coaching.
Well, I didn't know if I'd be qualified to be a coach. And Bill Gallagher, the former head coach at Ashland University, invited me over 22 years ago. And when I was looking at the money and looking at the fact that I was going to have to commute because I wasn't willing to leave the school system that my kids were in, I ended up saying no. And they interviewed three more candidates, and then he went to the kids on the team, and they said, all right, those three guys, who do you want? And he goes, the first one. And he goes, oh, this guy? No, the first one that said no. So he actually took money from his own salary, increased my salary, made a second offer, brought me back over, and he had me meet the kids. And once I met the kids on the team and I saw how passionate that they were at the D2 level, I said I'd do it for a year. And now 22 years later, 12th year as my head coach, as the head coach here at Ashland University, like my wife says, I can't believe you've done anything else in your life. Because I went through a 13-year period where I worked at a YMCA so I could have the time to train. So it's been a godsend, the sport of coaching. It's enabled me to take everything. I mean, I've competed in 23 different countries. It's given me the ability to take everything that I've learned and be able to avoid some of the pitfalls with my athletes that I made as an athlete in the early days. And I just love the coaching aspect of it. And I'll do it for as long as I can get highly motivated, chip on the shoulder, overlooked kids that just want somebody to illuminate that path for them like Coach Schotterman did for me.
That's awesome. Well, you know, you mentioned at the conference, your presentation was only six steps for, you know, for success. And you talk about illuminating and find, you know, one of the very first things you said was finding your light giver. So Coach Schotterman, was that for you? He was a guy that believed in you when maybe you didn't believe in yourself. You're believing in kids when maybe they don't believe in, or maybe the outside world's not believing in them. Talk a little bit about, you know, that first step, you know, finding your light giver. What is, not just as athletes, you know, but us as coaches being that person for our athletes.
Absolutely. Kids have met their light giver. Individuals have met their light givers at very, very different points of their life. Some go back as early as grade school or middle school or high school. Most people, though, it's actually in that collegiate setting or that next step. Al Schotterman was my light giver. He was a 72 Olympian. I just thought that was incredible that he had thrown in 1972 over 70 meters when my PR when he got there was 60. Wow. And so it was just amazing to me that he was that kind of an athlete and that he saw some of those same characteristics in me. A light giver is somebody that can illuminate a wider path of what you can currently see. Sometimes as an athlete, we have this narrow focus and we see all the things on the perimeter. And that light giver is that one that gets us to expand and think about what's out there. So I just think that that's the first step in any coach or any athlete's development is finding someone that can illuminate that path brighter than what you can currently see.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that, you know, so many times as coaches, I mean, we're, you know, we gotta be that for somebody, you know, and that's the fun part. We get an opportunity to do that, make that kind of impact on a young person's life. But I think sometimes what we get away from is that we have to have that for ourselves too. We have to find, you know, who those people are for ourselves, and it's the quote where, you know, you're the byproduct of the five people you hang out with, right? You know. And you want to make sure that you're the dumbest guy in the room in that situation. You go on, I think one of your second step, I think, was, you know, being an explorer, you know, and we were just talking off camera even before we started shooting about, I mean, here you are, 22 years, tons of success at Ashland, you know, tons of experience and success as an athlete, and you're still tweaking your program and playing with different protocols and different philosophies and things along those lines. Talk about being an explorer as a step for success.
For me, it was crucial. When I started traveling internationally, you know, if you look at the gene pool that the United States pulls from to make our U.S. Olympic team, we don't have the best results. We have the best gene pool. And a lot of those results, in my opinion, are being done better in Europe and some of the smaller countries that don't have that gene pool, and they have to have better science. That was something that fascinated me. The science aspect of it fascinated me. So when I went to my first World Cup in 1985 in Canberra, Australia, I was watching an East German javelin thrower by the name of Petra Felka.
Yeah.
And he was compounding snatch high pulls with 100 kilos and 22-meter 4K overhead ball throws. And I'd never seen that level of dynamics. And at that time, my vertical jump was 27. No one told me if that was good. No one told me if that was bad. There wasn't really anyone that was like talking about being 38 or 40 unless they were playing basketball. But what I realized is in my self-evaluation is that as my vertical jump increased, my throwing increased exponentially. And so when I would go, my first International Olympic Games in Seoul, Korea in 1988, the American team, the majority of them were down in Itaewon in the shopping district buying homemade or tailor-made leather goods. And I was sitting in the training hall. I was, you know, I was watching the Russians lift. I was out watching, you know, Sadiq and Tam and Lipinoff and people like that throw the hammer. And then I was watching the Germans lift and the Swedes and, you know, the Bulgarians. And I'm just feverishly taking notes. And too many athletes, in my opinion, and coaches, they stay within their bubble. It's either their way or the highway. They don't go to things like Summer Strong. They don't go see Charles Poliquin. They don't go out and see Dave Tate. I mean, I've been down to Elite FTS now three times in the last couple years to go down there. And this last one I went down there, I was there for 6 hours before I finally found a 0.5%. Because I say in an upcoming book that's hopefully going to be done here in the next 6 to 9 months, but I say that, you know, 90% of what I do is set in stone, but I spend 90% of my time trying to figure out the last 10%.
Yep.
Down there, and I was listening, and I was trying to find something, and then in the corner of the room, I saw a guy doing an exercise using high-speed RDLs into a very, very heavy band tension. And I just watched that, and I go, man, that's awesome. That's something I've never seen before. And so you've got to be willing to tweak your programs. I mean, as strength coaches, and I consider myself a strength coach because I do all the strength and conditioning for the track and field team. When I look at that, 90% of what we do, we're going to clean, we're going to snatch, we're going to squat, we're going to do auxiliaries, we're going to use bands, we're going to use chains, we're going to use boards, slingshots, rams. That's in everyone's training book.
Right.
Or everyone's toolbox. But I spend 90% of my time trying to figure out that last 10%. We move things in and take things out each year. So that's the exploration part of it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. It's something that I talk to our staff all the time is, you know, whenever we travel, we try to find, you know, a facility, a strength coach to talk to. You know, you learn so much. Just sometimes you can learn so much just by walking through a different training hall, you know, and seeing how it's set up and getting an opportunity to talk shop, getting an opportunity to watch people train. When my wife and I adopted our kids from the Ukraine, that's what I did. I went to the Olympic Training Center, and I mean, here's guys lifting on plywood, just lifting an ungodly amount of weight. And, you know, they weren't complaining about the type of equipment they had. They weren't complaining about, you know, the facility and the atmosphere. They were just sitting there cranking out an unbelievable amount of weight. And so, couldn't agree with you more. You also talk, you know, and this is something I use with our athletes all the time, is that, you know, I have to define good for them. You know, they sometimes they think their idea what good is and what my idea good is or what a standard should be is at a different level. You mentioned, you know, finding the gold standard, you know, elaborate on that.
Well, I think at some point as a coach and as an athlete, if you want to be the best at what you want to do, you have to go seek out who's having the most success. And you have to bang on them till you can get an audience with them. For me, that was a guy by the name of Stuart Toger. Stuart Toger was in Eugene, Oregon. He was the national hammer coach. He was the coach of Lance Diehl, who won the silver medal in the 96 Olympics in Atlanta. He's coached three of the four guys who have ever thrown over 80 meters in the United States, one being myself, Lance Diehl, Ken Flax. And then Kibway Johnson's the fourth, and I coached Kibway Johnson to 76 meters before he ever went and trained with Anatoly Bondarchuk. So finding that gold standard, I tell my kids even when they graduate, if they're not going to do athletics anymore, if you're in sports sciences, go spend the money to do an internship with someone like a Buddy Morris or a Tommy Maslinski or a Joe Kahn. And go see these guys and bang on them till they don't say no anymore, because they will see you. And you got to go seek the gold standard for whatever it is you want to do and learn from that person. You don't have to stay with them long, but you have to seek that person out. And that's just a natural, after you've had that exploration step, you have to go find that person that can really clarify and, you know, help you put your ducks in a row with what you want to be. And for me, that person was Stuart Toger.
Oh, that's great. I think that's so much of what young coaches do every day, or, you know, each and every year, is that they, you know, they do the internship experience. It's just kind of whoever will take me, or, you know, whatever's most convenient for me. But I couldn't agree with you more, where you say, you know what, make the sacrifice. If you have to go sleep on a floor or whatever, if it means going and finding that gold standard and learning that gold standard, then that, you know, it may not pay off right then in that moment, but it's going to pay off and dividend well, you know, multiplied exponentially throughout your entire career. And so I couldn't agree more. And I think the next level of that is what you talk about next is you know, eventually, if you do that enough, you become somebody that people want to come out and seek out and become and want to learn from. And I think, you know, I think we both agree that you become that much better when you teach people to do what you know. You know, I mean, it's one thing to be like, I always go back, I tell our coaches all the time, as a defensive back, you know, I was a decent defensive back, but then I stayed on for a year and I coached defensive backs when I got done playing. And if I would have known half of what I knew as a coach a year later, as I did as a player a year before, I would have been a much, much better player, you know. But Talk a little bit about, you know, doing something, developing something that makes others want to be where you're at.
For me in the coaching, that was, you know, I inherited some good kids. I had a Trinidad and Tobago athlete. We broke the national record in the javelin, a guy by the name of Kurt Thompson. But then he graduated, and then I started recruiting on my own. And in 1 year, I recruited a girl by the name of Adrian Blewett Wilson and Jackie Jeschling Ulm, who ended up marrying a Dr. Richard Ulm, a guy in my program who was a national champion for me in the hammer as well. I had both of those girls over a five-year period. Both of them took a red shirt. And in that five-year period, the two of them were 26-time All-American, 13-time national champions, and left with the NCAA record in the shot put, the discus, the hammer, and the weight throw.
Wow.
To go along with us already having the javelin throw. So I created something with those athletes. I developed something that made others want to be where I was. And at that time, I had 7 throwers in my program, and within 3 years, we had 15. And then we had 18. And then now we have 22 throwers in our program because of the Brian Vickers, the Kurt Roberts, the Kibway Johnsons, the A.G. Krugers, people who have been in our program that I've helped develop has made other high-level recruits say, you know what, I don't really care. Because when you go to the Olympic Games, they don't ask you what division you competed in. Top three, go.
Top three, go.
And so we have a valued education here at Ashland University, being a private school. We have one of the best food service programs in the country. We've now got some of the best facilities of any Division II program in the country. And so by developing what we've developed, it's made others want to be. So, you know, after you find that gold standard and you come back home, you've done all your exploring, you've seen what's possible. Now it's up to you. You've got to be a results-based organization that makes others want to come intern with you.
Right.
I get about 10 internship requests a year. I only do about two. The reason is that sometimes when they hear the price, they back off. Sometimes they'll cancel, and you know, because they're just kind of shake the bushes trying to get something for free.
Right.
But you know, whatever it is, I value my time with my team, so I'm really, really guarded in who I allow to come in and do internships with me, because they're just usually 2 or 3 day internships on power and strength development for explosive athletes. So that's why you have to develop something.
Well, I think, you know, with that goes, you know, when you're developing something, you're developing these systems as well. I mean, obviously with individual athletes, everything's a little bit, you tweak here and there, you know, for your athletes, but you develop this system and this culture where, you know, it just doesn't happen overnight. And exactly what you're saying is you've gone and you've seen these different things. The unique thing about it is you package it all together in your system, in the way that you present things, in the way that you get your athletes to buy in. And, you know, that system is what people are looking for, I think. They're, you know, so that they can evaluate your system versus another system versus another system to find their own.
You have to be able to point to those national champions and those NCAA record holders and those, you know, right now in Ashland, in my 22 years, we've been averaging in the throws alone 12 All-Americans a year. I don't know how we can keep that up, but we're trying and we're pushing and we're developing, and that's what we're selling to kids who you know, who come on campus.
Yeah, no, that's great. You had two more steps. One of them was, I think you had a great story that went along with this with Charles Poliquin, if I remember correctly, but you were talking about finding the Oracle, you know, and I think you maybe you met, you went up there and just you caught him walking down the street or something. Was that right?
Well, you know, first off, an Oracle to me is a step above the light giver. I'm sorry, a step above the gold standard. I mean, gold standard's pretty high. The Oracle, what makes the Oracle special is they're so well-versed in so many aspects of training that as a coach and an athlete, I call it collecting maps. You go and you learn this map, you learn this program, you learn the West Side template, you learn the triphasic template, you learn the tier phase template, you learn Brandon Lilly's cube method. You learn all of these things and you've got these maps, but maybe you don't know where they all go. And so what an Oracle does is it's somebody that can take all those maps you've collected and stitch them together with you. And when that map's completed, he'll show you where there's holes still in that map, undiscovered territories.
Yeah.
And that's what Charles Poliquin did for me. He gave me all this information I had. Most importantly, he showed me how to stitch it together and layer it. And sequence it in development instead of doing cluster training at this point. It needs to be here. Oh, okay, I get it. And so when I called him, I had never met him before. It was on the advice of a friend of mine, Angus Cooper from New Zealand, who was a hammer thrower that later went into bobsled, who met Charles. He goes, you've got to meet Judd Logan. Calls me and he goes, you got to meet Charles Poliquin. So as a favor, he says, come to Montreal, be at my house at 8 o'clock. And I got there at 8:15. That's pretty good coming from Ohio. And I'm in a town where I'm in a city where 90% of people speak French. And I knocked on the door and no one was home. So I sat out in my car. 45 minutes later, I see this 5'6" guy walking down the street with two bags of groceries and going to the apartment, and I go, that can't be him. I've never met him before. I'd seen pictures, and the guy was enormous.
Right.
And so I knocked on his door, and you know the story. He goes, you're effing late. We went in. It was a real awkward first 15 minutes. And he's like, I know you're tired. We talked for a little bit. I'm going to train at 11 o'clock at night. And, you know, this is where you're sleeping. And I walked in, and it was literally a rollout yoga mat, a sheet for a blanket, and a cushion from a couch. And so I was laying in there, and I could hear these guys training down there. So I grabbed my video camera and my notepad, and I just took a flyer, and I walked down the basement, didn't say a word, sat in the corner, started taking notes, watched Charles train. Then I got bold, and I started filming him training because he was doing things I had never, ever seen before. And so for me, that was just a huge eye-opening experience. We kept in contact. You know, I've been to a number of his seminars. We did one together over at the Alico facility in Sweden. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's, for me, he was my oracle. He was that person that, excuse me, that was able to stitch all that stuff together. And then more importantly, he taught me the next step. And that is that as a coach or an athlete, if you're ever going to fulfill your journey of fulfillment, you have to be able to mentor someone else's dream. And, you know, people say, well, you're doing that all the time. Well, you know, that's my job. I'm being light giver for some of these kids. But then some kids actually have the Adrian Blewett Wilson, the Jackie Jeschlings, the A.G. Krugers, the Kibway Johnsons, the Derek Woodskis. I was able to mentor their dreams and then send them out on their way so that they could be light givers and start that whole cycle. And so now I've got this huge coaching tree of people that have come through my program that are out there. I mean, Adrian's gone on to be 5-time world champion in women's Highland Games. A.G. Krueger's made 3 Olympic teams. Kibway Johnson's made 2 Olympic teams. Derek Woodski broke the national record. And to me, if you don't follow Derek Woodski on Instagram, you're missing probably your daily dose of testosterone because this guy is one of the most incredible riders and pumps me up on a daily basis. But, Derek, great friend of mine, and that's how you complete that cycle, mentor someone else's dreams.
Yeah, Derek's going to be on the show too. He's coming on next week, actually, and I'm excited about that as well, but that was, yeah, that was the sixth step, was mentoring someone else. And I think you hit it earlier on, but the word is legacy. I mean, that's, I mean, you can't, you know, I mean, all that knowledge, all that stuff that those people poured into you, and, you know, somebody being an oracle for you and all that exploration and, you know, being, you know, people that have been the light giver for you and you've been the light giver for, now it's coming all full circle where you're being able to magnify that and multiply that with the people that you've mentored. And I, you know, I have that with, you know, I started an internship program mostly because I had such great teachers. I felt obligated to give back to the people, you know, that poured into me. I felt obligated to do that. And I've had the same thing. And what those people do, and you mentioned all those people that have gone off to have great success, they've made me a better coach. They've probably made you a better coach, you know, because they take what you've done and build off of it. And all of a sudden you're like, you know what, that's not a bad idea right there. Maybe I should kind of put that back into my program. And so I've seen success that way in my own personal journey. I would imagine you have as well.
It has. I got a young coach that came here for graphic design. And after a year, he just said, Coach, I want to change my major. I said, well, what do you want to do? He goes, I want to be you. And I said, let's go. And so Blaine Magg, I got him a GA position at Findlay. In his first year, he coached a national champion. Grand Valley steals him. He's at Grand Valley State for, I think, 3 years, developed some of the best talent at the Division II level, does an amazing job, and then Walt Drenth at Michigan State calls me and says, we need a new throws coach. John Newell, who also came out of my program, just took the Tennessee job.
Yeah.
And so Knowles to my coaching tree. And so Walt calls me because Walt had hired John on my recommendation, and he hires Blaine Magg. Blaine Magg's one of those young coach that I watch what he's doing now, that he's taking stuff he learned from me. He always says, "Oh, coach, I got that from you." And I'm sitting there watching some of the stuff he's doing. I'm like, "You can get all that from me because I'm stealing that."
No doubt.
That just makes you feel so good when you see those young coaches that came out of your program and go on and coach at that next level. Chris Adams is down at UTSA. Zach Ball, who just graduated last year, is now at Northwood. Janine Tazarzik, who graduated from our program, is at Hillsdale now. And so we've got this huge coaching tree that I've been blessed to have the opportunity to have those people cross my path.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, Coach, I don't want to take too much of your time. We always end the show with some resources here. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
Best piece of coaching advice I ever received was from Billy Mills. Billy Mills was telling a story one night about Jeep Davis, and Jeep Davis was running an international relay, and USA basically dropped the baton, and they were out of it, and Jeep Davis got it on anchor, and you know as the story goes, because I told it down at Summerstrong, is that he broke the world record split in pushing the USA up to a fourth place finish and no medal. And they asked him afterwards, there was no way you guys were getting back into the medals. And he said, "My philosophy is what I had, I gave. What you save is lost forever." And that just, when Billy Mills said those words, I mean, like, Billy Mills wasn't inspirational enough talking about his own story. But to hear that story about Jeep Davis, who just passed away, and to know that someone actually was able to put into words that every workout, you give what you have, because if you save it by tomorrow, what you saved and you were going to do tomorrow, it's gone.
Yep.
There's no more opportunity to get better in that day. So what I had, I saved. What I had, I gave. What you saved is lost forever.
Oh, that's great. What a fantastic story, too. What about a app or book website recommendation? I know you mentioned Derek's Instagram account, which is fantastic.
Instagram
might be
is
a good app. Great.
Yeah. Strength Sensei, Charles Poliquin on Facebook and Instagram with Strength Sensei. I'm really into, and a lot of the bugs are being worked out. I'm doing a lot of work right now with my own testing with the Omega Wave.
Yep.
And with the Push Band. We're a program that can't afford 15 tendos to put on every rack. So a couple of our kids are getting push bands, and we're starting to collect some data. And when I turned 55 and broke the world record, I've been using the Omega Wave for 3 months prior to that to regulate my recovery. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the Omega Wave therapy, the Omega Wave app, and that ability to let your metrics determine potentially what your training is for that day. Mm-hmm. And more importantly is avoiding, we all overreach. Cal Dietz talks about that a lot in Triphasic. We all overreach. But at some point when your nervous system is not coming back and your metrics are showing that your cardiac state and everything is going down, down, down. I've seen that get to points in my own training that was unrecoverable till the season was over and I restarted the whole year.
Right.
So those are some things that I would definitely say are worth checking out.
No, that's great, Coach. Well, you know, what's always impressive about coaches are when you have the opportunity and it's genuine and it's automatically identifiable with coaches that have a pure passion to help people reach whatever that is in their life. And what's cool is seeing, I mean, you had, I think, three former athletes were in the audience at Summer Strong. To hear you talk about all these athletes that you've had that have gone off into coaching, And when you talk about legacy and you talk about making an impact, I mean, I don't know if there's any better example of that. And so I really benefited from your presentation, thought the world of it. Really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with everybody on that. And this will turn into a best-selling book. There's no doubt about it. But thanks so much, Coach, for coming on and spending a little time with us today.
I appreciate that. And then, you know, the biggest thing that I would say is shout out to Summer Strong 7.
No question.
I've already gotten an invite. If you're a young strength coach and you have an opportunity to get that get down to Summer Strong, that's got to be a must-do. You got all these internships that cost thousands of dollars. I think Bert's the cheapest deal in town, and what him and Richard and Sornex are doing down there. That's why I'm proud to, you know, to represent them on every occasion that I can. But I believe Derek's going to try to get down and be a presenter at Summer Strong, and I would have gone just to see that, even if I was not asked back to speak on. I'm already working on next year's talk because I don't want to go down there and go, well, he wasn't as good as last year. So that's a tough thing to do, but I'm so excited for, you know, get my hands on those center mass dumbbells and some of those other things that are coming out of Sornex.
No doubt.
Moving forward, man.
Well, they're such great people, first and foremost. And what's cool about that environment is it's such an eclectic group of people. Some of the best in the world at what they do, all collectively in one spot, talking, training themselves, and just interacting. And it's definitely a must for anybody, for sure. But, Coach, thanks so much for your time.
All right, man. Thank you. Go Eagles.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.